This is VOA News. I'm Michael Brown. Israel has decided to reopen a crossing into northern Gaza to allow more humanitarian aid into the hard-hit area. The move follows a warning from U.S. President Joe Biden to Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu during a phone call on Thursday that the United States would potentially condition support for Israel's offensive in Gaza on it taking concrete steps to protect aid workers and civilians. Freddie Joyner reports.
At the White House, spokesperson John Kirby declined to elaborate on what specific changes the U.S. would make to its policy toward Israel and Gaza, but said the U.S. expected to see an announcement from Israel on steps it's taking to protect civilians and aid workers in the coming hours and days.
We want to see that even as the Israelis work through their investigation, that they are willing and able to take practical, immediate steps to protect aid workers on the ground and to demonstrate that they have that civilian harm mitigation in place.
Israel said on Thursday it would adjust tactics in the Gaza war after describing the attack as the result of a misidentification and that findings from an investigation would be made public soon.
Freddie Joyner reporting. President Biden on Friday will visit the U.S. city of Baltimore where a cargo ship struck the Francis Scott Key Bridge, causing it to collapse.
As we all know, six individuals tragically lost their lives when the Francis Scott King Bridge collapsed last week. They were hard workers laboring in the middle of the night to repair potholes on a bridge that tens of thousands of travelers crossed every day. The president will meet with loved ones of those individuals during his trip tomorrow.
White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre, the Biden administration has approved $60 million in immediate aid and promised the federal government will pay the full cost to rebuild the bridge. For more news, join us at voanews.com. This is VOA News. A new report says that thousands of illegally trafficked firearms in the United States came through unlicensed dealers. We get the full details from the AP's Lisa Dwyer.
New data released by the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives says that more than 68,000 illegally trafficked firearms in the U.S. between 2017 and 2021 came through unlicensed dealers who are not required to perform background checks and are not required to keep records of their sales. Almost 60% of closed cases during that time period that could be traced involved people who had previously been convicted of a felony. The Biden administration has separately proposed a rule that would require thousands more gun sellers to get licensed and run background checks. That proposal quickly drew protests from gun rights groups who contend it would ensnare regular people who sometimes sell their own guns. I'm Lisa Dwyer.
Rescue workers on Thursday continue to save people who remain trapped following the strongest earthquake to hit Taiwan in 25 years. Authorities say at least 10 people died, more than 1,000 were injured in Wednesday's 7.4 magnitude quake. Currently, 18 people remain missing. U.S. authorities are trying to track down the thieves who stole as much as $30 million in a burglary in Los Angeles. We get the details from the AP's Norman Hall.
Thieves got away with $30 million in cash from a money storage facility in Los Angeles by breaking into the building on Easter Sunday. Police Commander Elaine Morales told the Los Angeles Times, which broke the news of the crime, that the thieves were able to breach the building as well as the safe where the money was stored. The operators of the business did not discover the massive theft until they opened the vault Monday. Media reports identified the facility as a location of Garda World, a global cash management and security company. The LAPD is saying only that the theft is being investigated with the FBI. I'm Norman Hall.
A judge has ruled that migrant children in makeshift camps along the U.S.-Mexico border, waiting to be processed by Border Patrol, are in the agency's custody. While advocates argue the federal government is responsible for the children, the federal government contends smugglers send migrants to camps they are not yet in federal custody. NASA says it's investigating whether an object that crashed into the roof of a home in the state of Florida came from the International Space Station. The two-pound object was taken from Naples, Florida, to the Kennedy Space Center to be examined. No one was hurt at the home. For more news, please join us at our website, voanews.com, or the VOA mobile app. I'm Michael Brown, VOA News.
mission to improve the humanitarian situation in Gaza and the safety of innocents.
If we don't see changes from their side, there'll have to be changes from our side.
NATO talks about a $108 billion five-year fund to support Ukraine's military.
NATO is providing support to Ukraine to help them defend themselves.
And at the New York International Auto Show, to no one's surprise, a big attraction, electric cars.
Out of our 29 vehicles in the lineup, 19 of them are electrified, meaning a hybrid, a plug-in hybrid, full electric, or a hydrogen fuel cell vehicle.
Today is Friday, April 5th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Scott Walterman. For the first time since the start of the war in Gaza, U.S. President Joe Biden threatened to condition support for Israel's offensive there, saying U.S. policy would change if Israel doesn't take concrete steps to protect civilians and workers. Hours after the call between Biden and Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, Israel approved the opening of three humanitarian routes into Gaza to allow more aid into the territory. The Erez Gate in northern Gaza will be temporarily reopened for the first time since the start of the war. Ashdod Port will be open for humanitarian deliveries, and more aid from Jordan will be allowed to enter via the Kerem Shalom crossing. The phone call between Biden and Netanyahu that preceded the change is detailed by White House National Security Advisor John Kirby.
On that phone call, the president emphasized that the strikes on the humanitarian workers and the overall humanitarian situation in Gaza are unacceptable. He made clear the need for Israel to announce and to implement a series of specific, concrete, and measurable steps to address civilian harm, humanitarian suffering, and the safety of aid workers. He made clear that U.S. policy with respect to Gaza will be determined by our assessment of Israel's immediate action on these steps. He underscored that an immediate ceasefire is essential to stabilize and improve the humanitarian situation and to protect innocent civilians. And he urged the Prime Minister to empower his negotiators to conclude a deal without delay to bring the hostages home.
It was a message also delivered by U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken, who was in Europe on Thursday.
Despite important steps that Israel has taken to allow assistance into Gaza, the results on the ground are woefully insufficient and unacceptable. 100% of the population in Gaza knows acute levels of food insecurity. 100% of the population is in need of humanitarian assistance. And those working heroically to provide that assistance are doing so in great peril to their own lives. This week's horrific attack on the World Central Kitchen was not the first such incident. It must be the last.
And to drive the point home, both men said if not, the U.S. would change its policy.
If we don't see the changes that we need to see, there'll be changes in our own policy.
If we don't see changes from their side, there'll have to be changes from our side.
Let's go deeper. Joining us now to talk about this is Nami Bar-Yakov. She's an associate fellow of the International Security Program at Chatham House. She's an international negotiator, arbitrator, and mediator. So President Biden has a phone conversation with Prime Minister Netanyahu, and then the United States publicly says what we told him was the humanitarian situation in Gaza has to change and aid workers have to be protected, and if it doesn't happen immediately, we're going to change our policy. What do you think? I mean, that's a significant change from the start of the war. After October 7th, President Biden, the first thing he did was fly to Israel and hug Netanyahu.
I think there have been six very difficult months for the United States, given that Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has not been acting responsibly for a very long time. So patience is running out. I think Antony Blinken, the old Secretary of State, has come to the region many times, has tried to talk reason with Netanyahu, who is currently behaving in a terribly unreasonable fashion. And I just think this was the straw that broke the camel's back. I think seven international aid workers, after many incidents that shouldn't have occurred, 33,000 Palestinian deaths, over 75,000 wounded, over 17,000 orphans, children who are separated from their parents or their parents are dead, and many areas in Gaza where food cannot get to, and there was famine warnings. So it's really time for the U.S. to change policy with Israel.
For Netanyahu, I know that politically not alienating the United States is a, while most Israelis still support the war in concept, alienating the United States is, that's a mortal sin, isn't it?
Well, I think that Netanyahu doesn't seem to care anymore, which is very dangerous. And I think he is incredibly isolated within his party and certainly within the war cabinet. The only people who support him are the messianic, extreme fanatic settlers in his coalition on the right, and they live in a bubble which is detached from reality, and he's carrying them with him because he cares more about his personal status staying out of prison, given that there is a trial hanging over him for corruption, than he does about humanity, than he does about his own citizens. He's basically holding Israeli citizens hostage to dreadful policies, and they're fed up. And the U.S. is fed up, too, for very good reasons.
What do you think happens next?
That's a very good question, and I don't know how Netanyahu will react, and I don't know how the U.S. will react, and I don't know what is being said in closed doors. I don't think that what was said publicly by Antony Blinken and James Kirby, respectively, about the immediacy of the need for Netanyahu to change, that's what was said in public. I'm sure a lot more was said in private, and the question is whether Netanyahu has shared that with members of his cabinet and what kind of pressure is being put on Netanyahu.
So when we talk of the of putting pressure on the Israeli government, what do you think the ask is going to be? What should it be?
I think it's time for the United States to put pressure on Netanyahu to allow the chief negotiators, the head of Mossad and the Internal Security Agency, the Shin Bet, to do their job in the negotiations that Qatar and Egypt and the U.S. are mediating painstakingly. And it's time for the U.S. to exercise the leverage over Israel to accept a compromise so that 134 hostages can be released and the war can end. Without an end to the war and a hostage release, humanitarian aid won't flow into Gaza and all hell could break loose.
Thank you so much for the time.
Thank you.
Nami Bar Yaakov with Chatham House. We're following these other stories from around the world. 13 fixed-wing drones were shot down over the capital of military-ruled Myanmar on Thursday, according to the military-run MRTV. Myanmar's shadow government and an anti-junta militia group claimed responsibility for what they said was a synchronized attack on the military headquarters and an Air Force base. A much-heralded first meeting between South Korean President Yoon Suk-yeol and a negotiator for young doctors who walked off the job in February appeared to have made little progress on Thursday after the latter expressed pessimism on social media. Sri Lanka says it does not see any need to reopen talks on a contentious island ceded to it by New Delhi 50 years ago. Turned out to be a hot-button issue in India. The party of Prime Minister Narendra Modi, who is expected to win general elections that start April 19th, has flagged the issue of Indian fishermen discontented after a 1976 pact between the neighbors barred them from waters around the island. Sunday's Election 24 coverage, Joe Biden and Donald Trump both won their party's presidential primaries in the Midwestern U.S. state of Wisconsin this week. With both their nominations secured, the candidates are fighting for a general election win in Wisconsin, which is one of a handful of swing states that could decide the 2024 race. VOA correspondent Scott Stearns reports the campaigns are working to win the support of black voters in Wisconsin.
Wisconsin voters chose Donald Trump in 2016, but Joe Biden 4 years later, and it was close both times. So Wisconsin could go either way in this election, with a nearly evenly divided electorate splitting most public opinion polls. In a close race, both sides are trying to gain ground with new voters. For Republicans, that means trying to cut into Democrats' historic advantage with black voters. Orlando Owens is the Republican Party's first African-American chair in Milwaukee County.
Who's supporting your kids' education right now? Who's supporting black businesses right now? Who's supporting the idea of having a secure border right now? Who's supporting the idea of your gun rights right now, that you can defend yourself?
4 years ago, Biden won Wisconsin by fewer than 21,000 votes, but carried Milwaukee by more than 145,000 votes. Analysis by Marquette University says 53% of those winning ballots for Biden came from majority black wards.
Milwaukee doesn't have to turn Republican. We just need to have an uptick. That's why it's so important. If we can get just a small bump here in the city, a small bump in the county, we win the state. We win the state. We win the country.
Trump told supporters that his multiple criminal indictments have helped him with black voters.
And a lot of people said that that's why the black people like, because they have been hurt so badly and discriminated against. And they actually viewed me as I'm being discriminated against. It's been pretty amazing.
Biden can't afford to lose the black vote in Wisconsin, and his campaign knows it, says political science professor Kathy Cohen.
Most individuals who follow the elections would say that without Milwaukee, Biden easily loses Wisconsin. I think the Biden campaign understands that. I think we will see a deep investment in ads and get out the vote and messaging and visits.
Biden was in Wisconsin last month announcing new funding to help right what he called historic wrongs.
For generations, black, brown, and Native American, Asian Americans, Native Hawaiians, communities weren't fully included in our democracy or our economy.
For Milwaukee, Biden says that means new sidewalks and bike lanes, along with bus lanes and modern infrastructure.
These are life-changing improvements. They're also going to make it easy for historic black communities in the north and Latino communities in the south to access jobs, school, and entertainment. Opportunities in the city and central hub.
Wisconsin barber Antonio Perkins says he's still making up his mind.
I mean, I am undecided. It's funny, I voted for Biden to get Trump out of office last election, and now I'm swaying more to Trump because of the things that we thought it was going to be better, and it just actually got worse. So, yeah, I'm definitely don't know which way to sway at this point.
That uncertainty among traditionally Democratic voters makes Wisconsin's already close race a focus for both campaigns through Election Day. Scott Stearns, VOA News.
NATO foreign ministers concluded their two-day meeting in Brussels Thursday, and while they've been celebrating the 75th anniversary of NATO's founding, they spent a good chunk of the day discussing a proposal put forward by Secretary General Jan Stoltenberg for a $108 billion five-year fund to support Ukraine's military. At the talks, Ukraine's foreign minister repeated requests for NATO to supply Ukraine with Patriot missiles amid concerns over recent territorial gains by Russia in Ukraine. Here's Henry Ridgewell with that story.
NATO foreign ministers marked the 75th anniversary of the alliance's foundation Thursday, but the birthday celebrations were muted. Despite NATO support for Ukraine, Russia continues to make battlefield gains and continues to rain down missiles and drones on Ukraine's cities. NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg gave a sobering assessment as the alliance meeting closed Thursday.
The situation on the battlefield remains serious. Ukraine needs more air defenses, more ammunition, and more aid.
Ukraine's foreign minister, Dmytro Kuleba, appealed to NATO allies to give that aid and made a specific request for American-made Patriot air defense missiles.
Saving Ukrainian lives, saving Ukrainian economy, saving Ukrainian cities depends on the availability of Patriots and other air defense systems in Ukraine. And we're talking about Patriots because it's the only system that can intercept ballistic missiles.
NATO's Secretary General has proposed a $107 billion five-year NATO fund to provide military support for Ukraine and hopes to reach agreement at July's annual NATO summit in Washington. But there was no concrete agreement at this week's meeting in Brussels.
Europeans both, I mean, in terms of financial support and military support, just can't make up for the huge amounts of military support that was coming from the United States.
Meanwhile, the Kremlin said Thursday that relations between NATO and Russia had, in its words, reached the level of direct confrontation. Henry Ridgewell, VOA News.
International Edition continues. I'm Scott Walterman. On Earth and in space, several efforts are underway to curb emissions from the super pollutant methane. It's a greenhouse gas that contributes to global warming. VOA's Veronica Balderas Iglesias looks at the latest innovations and policies in place as the International Energy Agency warns the clock is ticking to win the fight against climate change.
The first satellite developed by an environmental nonprofit has been in orbit since early March. Methane Sat pinpoints where leaks of the powerful greenhouse gas methane occur around the world. The data could help stakeholders fix the leaks. John Goldstein is Senior Director of Regulatory and Legislative Affairs at the Environmental Defense Fund.
The largest industrial source of methane is the oil and gas industry.
Methane is the second largest contributor to global warming behind carbon dioxide. More than 150 countries, including the United States, have promised substantial emissions reductions by the year 2030. Among the measures to achieve them, the U.S. Bureau of Land Management announced in late March the final methane waste prevention rule with updated regulations for operators of oil and gas leases in federal and tribal lands. Environmental advocates are thrilled. Deputy Director of the nonprofit Center for Western Priorities, Aaron Wise, via Skype.
From both a fiscal perspective and a climate perspective, it makes sense that when oil and gas companies are drilling on America's public lands, they should have to capture that methane.
In its latest Global Methane Tracker report, the International Energy Agency warns the global production and use of fossil fuels resulted in close to 120 million metric tons of methane emissions in 2023. The agency calls on the United States and other large polluters to do more to reduce emissions if climate disasters are to be avoided. The global approach to combat climate change would also benefit from stronger partnerships, some researchers say. Distinguished research professor at the University of California, San Diego, Veerabhadran Ramanathan.
We need to do something which will bring down the warming very quickly. I mean by very quickly, in 10 to 20 years' time. The cooperation between the oil industry, oil and gas, and scientists and policymakers. I hope we could do that.
Without a concerted effort to fight climate change, scientists predict extreme weather events around the world will become more frequent and intense. Veronica Valderas Iglesias, VOA News, Washington.
And finally, climate change also took center stage in a way at the 2024 International Auto Show. The show is one of the largest and most important auto shows in the world. And this year, the stars of the show, to no one's surprise, were the electric cars. Evgeny Malov went to the show. Here's her story, narrated by Anna Rice.
Over 100 participants with more than 700 vehicles have gathered this spring at the annual New York Auto Show. This year, hybrid and electric vehicles are taking center stage.
Out of our 29 vehicles in the lineup, 19 of them are electrified, meaning a hybrid, a plug-in hybrid, full electric, or a hydrogen fuel cell vehicle.
Subaru has our Solterra here. It is currently our electric vehicle that it did just get some new changes for 2024, so that's exciting.
There are also some brand new models like Nissan Kicks.
Redesigned from the ground up, now has all-wheel drive, a lot of technology, a sunroof available. So it's got a great balance, a power efficiency. It's typically an EV, a very EV market.
And some rebooted throwbacks, like an electric version of the Volkswagen minibus and the 1949 Volkswagen Beetle.
This is our 75th year of Volkswagen, and it is the 75th anniversary of the Beetle's first coming to the United States. So we've got a lot to celebrate, and I wanted to highlight the fact that the ID bus is new for the United States market this year. It's an all-electric bus. It's there on the BEV platform, and we're going to be having that come out later this year.
This year, Genesis showcases its vision of Lux electric cars of the future. There are also futuristic-looking Rolls-Royces, Lamborghinis, and the Kia EV9, which holds the titles of both the 2024 World Car of the Year and the 2024 World Electric Vehicle. For Evgeny Maslov in New York, NRA, VOA News.
This has been International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of everyone here at VOA, thank you so much for spending your time with us. For pictures, stories, videos, and more, follow VOA News on your favorite social media platform and online at voanews.com. You can also download the VOA app. In Washington, I'm Scott Walton.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In the interests of responsibly managing the relations between the United States and China, President Joe Biden and PRC President Xi Jinping spoke to one another by phone April 2nd. It was the first discussion between the two leaders since their face-to-face summit in Woodside, California last November. National Security Communications Advisor John Kirby told reporters the almost two-hour conversation was a candid and constructive discussion on a range of bilateral, regional, and global issues, including areas of cooperation and differences.
They encouraged continued progress on issues discussed at the Woodside Summit, including counter-narcotics cooperation, ongoing military-to-military communications, talks to address artificial intelligence-related risks, and continuing efforts on climate change and people-to-people exchanges.
The PRC's behavior in the Pacific was discussed as well, said Advisor Kirby, with President Biden emphasizing the importance of maintaining peace and stability across the Taiwan Strait and reaffirming the importance of the rule of law and freedom of navigation in the South China Sea. President Biden also raised concerns about the PRC's support for Russia's defense industrial base and its impact on European security, and the president underscored the U.S. commitment to the complete denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula.
President Biden also raised continued concerns about the PRC's unfair trade policies and non-market economic practices, which harm American workers and families.
In addition, the president informed the Chinese leader the United States will continue to take necessary action to prevent advanced U.S. technologies from being used to undermine our national security. And he brought up the U.S. interest in seeing a divestiture of the social platform TikTok from a China-based company so that, Advisor Kirby said, the national security interests and the data security of the American people can be protected. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen is currently in China for meetings, and Secretary of State Antony Blinken will travel to Beijing soon to advance our interests through cabinet-level diplomacy, noted National Security Communications Advisor Kirby. He underscored, however, the U.S. believes there is no substitute for regular communication at the leader level to effectively manage this complex and often tense bilateral relationship, and both presidents agreed to pick up the phone and speak whenever needed.
That was an editorial reflecting the view.